Indeed, and we've got Richard Hoagland, Mike Barra. You can address your questions to either one of them when we come back on Coast to Coast AM. Mike Barra, have you been accused of being a conspiracy theorist by any chance?
Yeah, I think we both have at various times. And, you know, I mean, in some ways, you know, I've been called a conspiracy theorist or paranoid, but, you know, there's an old saying that, paranoia is a state of mind brought on by being in possession of all the information.
And, Richard, we know you have been accused of being one.
Well, I hold it as a badge of honor because, you know, George, I hate to tell you this, but conspiracies are real. If conspiracies were not alive and well on this planet, why are we funding the NSA, the CIA, the FBI, every police department, every vice squad? I mean, people get together to try to do bad things. And now we have national pundits, you know, national mainstream media talking about lies that got us into a war that's killed thousands of people, thousands of Americans, and God knows how many Iraqis, based on lies. On deliberate misrepresentation of information. So the idea that this agency, quietly off there in the corner, where not many people are observing and even fewer seem to be caring, could have systematically been set up to lie to us and to present us with this fault front Western town where the real action either used to go on at NASA and no longer does, or used to go on at NASA and now is being conducted by an extraordinary advanced, you know, secret space program where NASA is merely the kind of magician's left-hand parlor trick that keeps everybody's eyes focused while the real action is over on the right. It doesn't matter. The fact of the matter is that NASA is not what everyone thinks it is, and we prove it time and time again with documentation in Dark Mission.
Well, people who will not accept the fact that there might have been lies will fight you tooth and nail on this and the war and everything else. How do you get them convinced? How do you change them?
Well, there's a certain percentage of people that, as my grandmother used to say, those convinced against their will are of the same opinion still. I mean, you don't really worry about those folks. What we're looking for, what Mike and I are looking for, is honest brokers, people in the middle of the bell curve, who basically are able to look at evidence and make a reasoned decision. I mean, this whole thing about Kennedy, I am still astonished that this has not been picked up by historians because it gives lie with official government documents and the testimony of the surviving member of Khrushchev's family, his son, a respected academician. It gives lie to the idea that there ever really was a space race because from the get-go, from the very beginning, our president was trying everything he could to convince the Russians to go to the moon together. It makes no sense unless there was some enormous big prize. And of course, Mike and I in the book lay out the evidence that that prize is the remains of an extraordinary ancient ET civilization. Let me make one little parenthetical note here. You know, David Wilcock, who's a friend of ours and a colleague and has been on your show many times, has just completed some amazing DNA research. He's got scientific studies now that prove that DNA is not immutable. It doesn't mutate like the Darwinists, you know, basically think. It basically is subject to some kind of outside external information stream that forces it to change as the physics changes, where we heard that before. And is it very possible that NASA, when they went to the moon and found the libraries and brought back the most amazing thing of all, which is that robot head that I showed you a year ago, almost exactly a year ago tonight in Joshua Tree, California, that amazing robot head lying on the moon? Is it possible that the astronauts, when they brought that back, they were able to tap into it to get it to talk to them and were able to get it to tell them about the stunning biological advances and discoveries of our great-great-great-great ancestors? And some in NASA and in government decided, well, this certainly is something that the fundamentalists are never going to want to know about, so we'll keep that secret, too.
Now you're pushing the envelope on that one, Richard.
Well, but secrets that could cure cancer, could alleviate AIDS, could actually ultimately wind up extending human lifespans to hundreds, if not thousands, of years. In other words, when you look at what is possible through the confrontation of our current technology with a stunningly ancient ET science right next door on the moon, available in whatever form. It may or may not be in that robot's head. Who knows?
I still think when push comes to shove, you will find out that whatever might be on the moon came from us millions of years ago.
But I'm saying it is from us. It's our own extraordinary knowledge that has been suppressed because that's part of the heritage we're not supposed to know. What people need to do is they need to go to David's website, which is divinecosmos.com. He's got an article there called Your DNA is Changing. And I understand that you're discussing with him a possible show on this.
Yes, we are in negotiations.
Strongly urge you go ahead with it because he's got bulletproof science that basically is talking about the practical implications of suppressing knowledge at the cutting edge, at the boundary, at the frontier. And that's only in the biological area. Imagine in energy, in environment, in anti-gravity, in transportation, in political science. Imagine if our ancestors actually had figured out a way to keep the human species from at the first flicker of an eyebrow of reaching for a gun as opposed to a pen. Wouldn't that be worth us knowing about tonight?
First time caller line. You're up with us on Coast to Coast. Where are you calling from?
Calling from Joshua Tree, California. My hair stands.
There you go. Go figure, right?
George, I'm not a scientist. I'm just a college student. I'm blind. I do want to share something really interesting. Before I lost my sight in 92 of September, I was outside staring, just having a cigarette, watching the sky. It's beautiful out here. And all of a sudden, I look up, and there's this massive rectangular city. And it's pure black. This is for Richard, by the way. And Richard, you're off the charts, man. I can't believe how willing you are to talk to everyone about all of your knowledge. But it was flying through the sky, and it was engulfing stars. So I knew I couldn't see through it. And then in the back end, I could see that stars were returning. And a few months later, nobody was with me, so obviously I couldn't tell anyone. A few months later, I talked to a friend of mine who flew around in Vietnam, in the Cambodia. Nothing's happening in Cambodia, Air America. He was one of the guys flying helicopters through there. And he said he was out at a barbecue with the town council and a reporter and himself. They happened to be in 29 Palms, and they called the base. They saw the same thing, but they denied it, that deniable possibility. 2 years ago, a cargo plane flew right down our Highway 62 in the Morongo Valley. No noise, low level, stopped. People got out of their car and stared. We turned the radio on. They said there was a plane that was ailing. This was flying. It was like a magnetism or something. You couldn't hear anything. And then it took off and went towards Lucerne, Victorville, north. Now, and one other comment, and maybe you can comment on it. Another comment is we have a lot of contrails up here near the base, but I think they're chemtrails. Anytime anybody tries to research that stuff, everybody goes, oh, you're a conspiracy theorist. Oh, you think too much. What are you talking about? But, you know, my wife gets sick continuously after that happens. And, you know, you're right. Society isn't waking up. You talk to these college students, and they don't want to talk about these things. And I'm just interested in if anybody else has talked about that rectangular spaceship, or if also planes that fly magnetically, the size of cargo planes, or even the contrails, the chemtrails, because nobody talks about those. And anytime you do, the Department of Navy starts chasing them around. I'll listen to the response on the radio. Thank you, guys.
Okay, Michael. Thank you, Joshua. In terms of that rectangular object, it has been spotted all around the country. It could be one. It could be many. I think it's what they spotted during the Phoenix Lights. Police officers have spotted this as well. Some people from the fine magazine Aviation Week believe that it's man-made structures. Mike Barrow, Richard, which one of you wants to take a quick reaction to his call?
Big and black and rectangular. It sounds like the monolith from 2001 or something.
It does.
That's scary.
Mike, you're going to need to speak up. I can barely hear you.
Okay. Well, we hear him well, Richard.
Okay.
So, you know, I mean, there were things. I remember I worked on a program called the MX missile back, 1982, and there was discussions then amongst workers of previous programs they had worked on magnetic technologies to basically keep the missiles preserved in the silos without actually touching any part of the silo in these constant rotating magnetic fields. So I think that was, so that was 82, and then that project had actually been 5 or 6 years before. So for a long, long time, we've had various types of magnetic technologies that could account for the plane experience that he had. So certainly it's out there, and certainly, you know, what he saw and what his neighbors saw is within the realm of possibility and probability.
Some quick fast blasts coming in. One here, Richard says, Richard is getting mad. A robot head? It speaks perfect English? Come on now. Another one. Great show.
George, hold on. Say it spoke English?
No, you did not.
You know, this is where people's limited vision is really troubling, because the idea that we're the most sophisticated in intelligence, not only in the universe, but in the galaxy or the solar system, is extraordinarily provincial. Once you have demonstrated there are ruins, and again, I go back to the data, read the book, look at the photographs, go to the website. If you go to darkmission.net and you log on the first link, you'll see two choices. One takes you to the website. The first link takes you to, I think, a dozen or so pictures that Mike put up there. Just look at those pictures. Really look at them. And then come to our November 4th event, if you're a skeptic. We will prove that those images are absolutely bona fide ruins. Once you get to the idea that there are ruins, the next step is, well, who built them? You know, we're not talking Mohicans, you know, Indians, stevedores building the Empire State Building. We're talking about a sophisticated technology that would be used in a robotic, you know, automated sense to construct glass structures miles high out of available materials on the moon, which glass is one of the key materials, silicon dioxide. So the idea that the astronauts might have tripped over a remnant of that ancient, you know, alien race, a servant, a robot, an android, whatever you want to call it, and brought it home. Because remember, every robot knows everything every other robot knows. So it's like having a window into a Galactica encyclopedia if you can figure out, as the Fast Blaster correctly notices, how to talk to it. Well, there's only a certain number of ways to talk to technology in this universe. Numbers. That's why we have a SETI program based on numbers. So the idea that once you found it, I mean, maybe it took them 30 years to figure out how to talk to it, and that's suddenly why we have this whole masquerade about going back, except it's not going to be NASA. It's going to be a secret private effort that is in deep black ops, and we'll never know what they find, because they don't want us to know what they find based on the previous 30 years of evidence we have in the book.
Do you still have that picture up on your website, enterprisemission.com?
Or sure do.
Who's got it? You have it? Okay.
And it's on Dark Mission.
All right, so great.
Just go to Dark
Mission. .net.
It's also on the promo page for the November 4th event.
All right.
Now,
wild
thing I want to
hold
say
on.
Before
hold
we
on.
Leave...
Hold on. Hold on. Let me take this call. He's been on hold a long time.
Oh, okay.
Wildcard Line, you're on the air with us. Hi there.
Yes, hi, George. Hi, Richard. This is Bill in West Hartford, Connecticut.
Hello, Bill.
Hi, how are you?
I'm doing fine.
I'm doing fine. I'm sort of Mr. Space for the Connecticut area. Believe me, I have tons and tons of spacecraft articles and space programs and Apollo missions and pictures and articles all over the walls of my apartment.
Did you know that I used to be assistant director of the West Hartford, Connecticut Science Center?
Yes, and did you know I tried to get a job there in 1985 and as recently as 2002, but I wasn't able to.
Too bad.
Well, let me give you three things real quick and you comment on them, one right after the other. Number one, I have all the DVD sets from something you'll know about, spacecraftfilms.com.
Yes,
the six
well.
DVD sets of all the Apollo missions, and on one of them, I believe it's Apollo 14, where they couldn't take the TV camera up to Cone Crater, there's one photo, and I know there are two photos. I know they're separate photos because the ground moves, the lunar surface moves. There's something in the sky that's blue. It looks like a small comet. It's not the Earth. So that's number one. Number two, why didn't NASA use the directlauncher.com, direct launcher way of getting to the moon? I'm sure you've heard of that. And question number three, when the Phoenix Mars lander arrives on Mars next May 25th, if it should by chance discover life underneath the soil of the North Polar region of Mars, will NASA keep that quiet as well?
Okay, let me answer them in reverse. On the Phoenix question, no, they can't tell us. Unless the political game plan, which, of course, we're not privy to, says that it's now time to open the door a crack and admit the possibility of microbes. If that's true, then the guy who really deserves credit for discovering life on Mars is Gil Levin. On your direct launcher, yes, the direct technology, which is basically the shuttle technology put together in a new way, could get us to the moon much cheaper, much faster, if this administration was really interested in doing that. And it would preserve most of the jobs in the shuttle program. It would be the works program that NASA has become. It could also keep us at the forefront of space technology, get us back to the moon ahead of anybody else, save about $35 billion, according to the last numbers I saw. And the fact that they're not doing it, I have said to my rocket and all space friends, is a clear signal that they don't intend to do this. It is, you know, my intel friends praise, hide in plain sight and plausible deniability. This is a con game. And it's not their money, remember. It's not their money. They can waste as much of our money as they want. Look at what we're wasting every day in a certain part of this planet. And finally, the first question had to do with the things that were seen on the DVDs. Steve Troy, who was one of our esteemed colleagues and is going to be much more visible in future events and is also well represented in Dark Mission, independently found those two sets of images showing the remarkable glass structures on those photographs taken near Cone Crater, the two different sets, as well as on the TV. There were TV frames that were sent back to Earth from the mission. Where as soon as they landed, they set up a TV camera, which is what you see Mitchell doing on that one photograph, set up the big radio antenna and sent TV live back to Earth. You can see on some of the TV, as well as on some of the 16-millimeter film shot from the little geology rock carrier that they dragged with them, you can see these glass structures over another part of the moon photographed on multiple frames. So, no, there is no doubt these things are real, and the key confirmation is the same frames in extraordinary clarity are showing up on official NASA websites, and the most remarkable confirmation is going to be shown both in the book. When you look in the book, you'll see in the middle there in the color plates an absolutely incontrovertible proof. I dare any skeptic to give me a non-lunar ruins explanation for what we're seeing in those photographs, and we will, of course, show them and explain them in detail in Los Angeles.
Will they accuse anybody of Photoshop, Richard?
Well, how can you accuse anybody at NASA of Photoshop? Again, it's not just the pictures we have. These are confirmed on official NASA websites and official NASA DVDs. We actually went out, and Mike, I think you bought one of the DVDs so that we have a hard copy record. So in case they change the web, we have a printed record and a credit card trail of how we got it from NASA.
Well, it is amazing. Stay with us. Richard Hoagland's website, enterprisemission.com, darkmission.net. Mike Baer, of course, darkmission.net as well, along with lunaranomalies.com. We'll be back with both of them. We'll wrap things up with final questions. I'm George Norrie. This is coasttocoastam.com. If you want to email me, I always make that simple. Just george@coasttocoastam.com. On our next Coast to Coast program, John Climo joins us as we talk about channeling, investigations on receiving information from paranormal sources, and also what really happens in the afterlife, suicide victims. Fascinating program. That's our next Coast to Coast show. We'll take final calls now. Richard, what do you hope to accomplish with Dark Mission?
Gosh, I never thought you'd ask.
I pace myself.
I've noticed. Yeah. You know, by the way, I must say that this has been one of the best interviews I've heard you do in quite a while.
With you?
Yes. What, you think I'm at the whole show?
Oh, my others have been superb. This one's with you.
No, what we want to do is I want people to very clearly understand that this is not just about a book. You know, I've written books before. This is Mike's first book, so he's kind of a newbie, but you know, books come, books go. Graham's written a book. Whitley's written a book. You know, we've all written books. The idea that we're 217 tonight at Amazon.com, we started out the evening at 241, remember?
Yep.
That is the upper 1,000th percent, 1,000th percent of the 2+ million books being sold on Amazon.com. Now, why is that important? It's not making Mike and me a lot of money. if you knew how piddling the percentages that authors get.
I know.
You know. You and Bill Burns know. And as the author, you really know. So you don't do this to get rich. But what this is, what we're looking at in real time in the 21st century on this incredible device, which we have to thank Bill Gates every day. We should get on our knees and kiss the ground he walks on. We have an instant tracking poll, an honest, unwavering, spinnable tracking poll for how important the audience thinks this idea contained in this book and this data really is.
Richard, I'm surprised at you, though. You're a conspiracy theorist. Why don't you say NASA is buying up all the books to keep them out of the hands of the public?
Well, we're going to know that in the next few days, won't we? Because what we need is for people all across the country who love to go to bookstores like I do to forego the electronics of Amazon and Barnes & Noble and go into Barnes & Noble and see when the damn thing appears on the front table, which we have been told it's going to. They also should go to every other bookstore they frequent, and they should ask, where is Dark Mission? Where is Dark Mission? They should print out, those who are on the computer, the stats of how it's doing on Amazon. And booksellers are like everybody else. They follow the leader. They follow where the money is. Follow the money, that old line. So they will order the book when they see it's moving very, very well. More important than the book is the political leverage it gives us in Washington. Because you got to know that these numbers are going to be very carefully looked at and scrutinized by the reporters who come to our press conference. The other thing I want this audience to do, and I know you're happy we're probably asleep, curl up there all nice and warm and toasty under the covers. You don't want to get up and get a pen or a pencil. I really need you to do this, okay? Write down this idea. Tomorrow morning, I want you to look up, use information, look up the producers of The Daily Show, The Colbert Show, O'Reilly, Keith Olbermann, Chris Matthews, all the major shows, Larry King, etc. Call them and say you want Mike and me on the show confronting our toughest critics. We will stand toe-to-toe with anybody. You might mention Michael Shermer and Phil Plait. Let's give Phil his moment in the sun here, okay, and see if he'll step up to the plate, right? The idea that this data can rise or fall on Mike or me is not in the cards. The data stands on its own. Dedicated NASA people are putting this data on the NASA website so that Ken Johnston, by the way, it's Ken Johnston Sr., not Jr., I misspoke a while ago. Ken Johnston Sr. is finally, after 30-plus years, vindicated as a real patriotic American.
Didn't we have him on the show? We had Ken Johnston.
Yes, Ken has been a guest on this show. He's been on with I think, a couple times. That was back 11 years ago when we did the first national press conference.
I think we had him on, though, during the shuttle disaster.
Yes, I think he was one of our experts we called in because of his shuttle expertise.
Yes, I'm
pretty
sure.
At the tail end of his NASA service. The point is, you asked me what is this all about. It's bigger than a book, George. It's a campaign. This is a political season. When I see Hillary Clinton positioning herself to basically keep secret for another 30 years what is waiting for Americans to find on the moon, I am frankly ashamed. I am ashamed that I used to be a Democrat.
Yeah,
because real Democrats should want power for the people, and the ultimate power is the democratization of the knowledge waiting for us on the moon. I mean, tonight there is a 6,000-pound Japanese unmanned spacecraft called Selene, which is loaded for bear. It's got dozens of instruments, including a high-power radar. Do you think the Japanese have sent a spacecraft the size of a bus to the moon because they had nothing better to do? They know what's there, and they're serving notice to the world that they're going to get there first.
Let's see if we get some great pictures out of them. Let's go back to the phones. We'll pick it up by going to our West of the Rockies line. You're on the air with us. Hi there.
Hi, my name is Anselmo. I'm calling from Albuquerque, New Mexico.
Hello, sir. Go ahead.
I have some great information for you guys. I was at a flea market a couple of months ago, and I came across some photographs of the lunar landing, which seemed to be first print directly off of the the film.
And which one was that? The original first Apollo landing?
I can't quite tell. I'm not that familiar with the differences on them. But I've been trying to get a hold of you guys to let you know this, and I heard the concept of the show tonight, and I was determined to get through so that you guys could know about this, but I will...
Okay, send me an email.
What's on the photograph? What's so unusual about the photograph?
You can actually see the stars in the background, which...
Yeah, they're not stars, but that's their structures.
But that means they're really, really good generation photographs,
yep.
George.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Because
there
no stars
actually...
were capable of being photographed, but the glass speckles from the sunlight is easily visible and could be mistaken for stars. So, yeah, we need to see the pictures. So send me an email at enterprisemissionmail@yahoo.com. That's right at the top of the Enterprise Mission website where it says Contact Enterprise Mission. Or you can send me a fax to 505-332-1164. You can send an email to me and Mike at darkmission.net. Just go there and you'll find an email address. I really need to see these pictures.
East of the Rockies, you're up with us. Hi there.
Hi, my name is Richard. I'm calling from Gainesville, Florida.
Hello, Richard. Thank you for calling.
Sure, sure. It's a pleasure. I have a couple questions for Mr. Hoagland.
Yes, sir.
One of them, are you aware of the work of Albert Roy Davis and how that relates, how his discoveries relate to what you've been talking about tonight?
In all honesty, I can't say that I am.
Okay, well, I can tell you some information about it. It's really fascinating. He discovered back in 1936, was that long ago already, that he discovered that magnetism is actually two separate energies with different effects. And he went through, you know, many experiments with animals and plants. And one of the things he discovered was that when you would expose the male, when he had, you know, the research animals that he had there, he exposed the male to a North Pole magnetic field prior to conception. And he also used the South Pole for other animals. And anyway, the offspring of these animals would always be physically smaller. For the North Pole would always be physically smaller, weaker, and far more intelligent than normal. And the South Pole would become just the opposite, where they would grow really large and strong, but mentally were not very sharp. And but also the North Pole exposed animals would live much longer than normal. They would live up to 50% longer than, you know, what would be considered normal for the species.
Mm.
So, yeah, it's really fascinating. And then, you know, when I think of what I've heard about extraterrestrials, and you think of their size and their stature, they're usually described as short, you know, thin limbs,
mm-hmm.
and very intelligent. So that's what North Pole magnetism would actually do if it was exposed to a person like that or any animal. They use numerous species. It was always the same with every type of animal. But also their work had to do with health, how you can use magnets to improve health. And they had extraordinary success with the animals in eliminating cancer using North Pole magnetism.
Well, that's possible in terms of the magnetism. And, of course, whenever I hear the word magnetism, Richard, I think of Edward Leeds Skolnin from Coral Castle. Yep.
And there's a whole body of work from the Russians, the so-called torsion physics, which we've been getting into. There's a whole chapter in the book devoted to a very lengthy explanation of HD, hyperdimensional physics, and it relates now to the Russian torsion experiments?
The second chapter is massive. It's about 13,000 words. It's all about everything you always wanted to know about hyperdimensional physics, but we're afraid to ask, and it includes a lot of the new stuff on the torsion physics experiments by the Soviets that we were not aware of until very recently. So that'll cover everything and explain it in complete detail.
Okay, thanks for that call. Next up, let us go to our wild card line. Your turn. Hi.
Hello, this is Robert calling from Topeka, Kansas.
Hey, Robert, go ahead.
Hey, my question is for either one of the guys. Concerning, they mentioned the Orion spacecraft. Are we currently using that, and are we going to the moon with that, and do we have a base on the moon? And I'll listen off the air.
Mike?
Well,
ahead,
Orion is theoretically going to be built in the next few years, designed and built by a consortium involving, I believe it's Lockheed primarily, and they're going to build this spacecraft. It's supposed to replace the shuttle. It's simply a larger version of Apollo, on steroids, as Richard described it earlier, and it's supposed to be the main crew module for future trips to the moon. And the purpose, ultimately, is to start landing and get on the moon and construct a permanent base there. So that's the concept. That's what they keep telling us. Whether it's going to happen or not, it doesn't look particularly promising right now because, as Richard mentioned earlier, of all the delays, the lack of funding, really the only way I think that it could accelerate and we could really have this spacecraft sooner rather than later and start this process to be sped up would be if something, and let's hope it doesn't happen, but if something happened to another space shuttle or something happened to the International Space Station, ISS up there, and sort of forced us to reevaluate what we were doing in space and where we wanted to go and how quickly we wanted to do it.
And you're right, Lockheed Martin is the lead project manager on that. First time caller line, you're up with us on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hello?
Hello. Yes, sir. Go ahead.
Hi. My name is Bill. I'm calling from Washington, D.C.
All right, Bill.
I've been a listener since the early days of Art Bell. And I worked on Capitol Hill for a member of Congress in the early 80s. And I want to say, Richard, I think it's been long in coming that some of this stuff comes out. And I'm surprised it's taken so long.
Well, you know what Orson Welles used to say when he did those Gallo wine commercials? Make no wine before it's time.
And does that mean that you've heard this stuff before when you worked on Capitol Hill? Or
no? Well, I just want to make a brief observation, then a question. I wasn't on the Hill in a direct capacity. I was working for a consulting firm at the time. But I spoke to several of the senior staffers who worked on the UFO investigation in the 80s.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't even remember exactly what year it was. But four of the people I spoke to all said to me confidentially that they had no doubt that there was extraterrestrial life and that some of the documents that they didn't see directly or saw indirectly confirm this. And I've kept that with me for many years. I've told some friends about it, and people say, yeah, and on and on and on. And I think finally with some of your evidence, things may come to fore. And I think using celebrities is a great way to help put some of this out, especially in the journalism community. I was wondering, Richard, whether Walter Cronkite, and I know you had some involvement with him, has ever gotten into any of this, or he's just kept out of the whole picture?
Well, years ago, when I met with Walter and David Webb, who was a member of President Reagan's Space Commission, Walter made me a promise. He said at the appropriate time, which he did not define, he said, my role is television. And maybe this book will be the appropriate time. I can only hope that the man who spent so much of his own personal capital and interest in the space program would have interest in the real space program and what they really found and snookered all of us, him included, into basically putting up with.
Okay, Bill, thanks. Let's take a few more calls and then we're out of time. Wildcard Line, you're up with us on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Yes, Dr. Hoagland. I read
not
on
doctor,
the
but thanks anyway.
Website that that the Soviets shot two missiles at the moon in 1959. The first one missed, and the second one died on impact. And I'd like your comments on this, and also what may have become of the first Russian astronaut.
Well, we have a lot of authenticated material from the KGB files that were declassified when the Soviet Union collapsed, and my old friend Jim Oberg is really the expert on this. And in terms of the first Lunik missions, the unmanned missions tracked by Jodrell Bank, yes, the Soviet Union did send the first bauble. It was maybe the size of a grapefruit to the moon, crashed into the lunar surface. I think it was somewhere near Sinus Iridium. I'm not quite sure, but I think that's roughly where it landed. In terms of astronauts or cosmonauts we never heard about, again, there are stories that have been circulating for years. There's little documentation, although I must admit that personally I haven't kept up with those early years because I'm much more interested in what the Soviets did not do in terms of the moon. I mean, they basically just suddenly quit when they were on the eve of beating us. They did not send an unmanned or a manned spacecraft around the moon like they technically could have after they got Kodak film back with their unmanned mission around the moon, which we believe saw and demonstrated clearly the ruins were there, and they had to reappraise their entire ideas of what was waiting. So this cover-up has gone on all sides because it's in the interest of humanity, these folks seem to think, that we be held down on the farm and not allowed to progress. Now, there's one other thing I want to make a point on, and that is, when people come to the November 4th event, we're going to put you in the theater. We're going to be filming a documentary on what NASA didn't tell you is on the moon. We don't even have a formal title for it yet. We figure we're going to do this week. It's Sacred Mysteries and Enterprise Mission collaborating together. Jay Widener and Sharon Rose are the producers over at Sacred Mysteries, and you, of course, have had Jay on several times, George.
Yes.
Jay is a very talented filmmaker. We have wanted to do a project for years and years and years, and he finally convinced me that the time had come, and based on the political success of Dark Mission, even before it's a book, he said, the time has come to do this and get it in theaters, so we're going to try to have a release next year, and we're going to interview as many people that's come to the event on the 4th of November as possible to put you in the film. Why do you think this is important? Do you think the data is real? Do you think we're making it up? Whatever your opinion is, we will put it unvarnished in the film because we want this to be a cross-section of a democratic response to the mysteries that NASA has hidden for over 30 years.
By the way, the Soviet Luna 2 probe lands on the moon in 1959.
Thank you.
How about that? There it is right there.
Wonderful.
Oh, I'm telling you, instant. Richard, we're out of time. Michael, we're out of time. Good luck with both of you. Dark Mission, the book, and the secret history of NASA. Do keep us abreast of how things are going. And let me know, Richard, what television shows may pick you up, would you? And
you'll
we'll promote that on the show. Thank you very much.
Support all
thanks, yours. Thank you very
absolutely.
Much.
Very enlightening night tonight. For Steve Carr, Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Ladasur, Ross Mitchell, Ian Punnett, and Art Bell. I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.